Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Ages of Rock podcast. I am Dennis, and I'm here with Bill, and I'm here with Alan. And we're here with Brian, and we'll be talking to him here in a minute. This is episode 254, and we have Brian Forsight. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay, I should ask you that beforehand because I usually get these things wrong. But anyway, he is one of the originators from the band Kix, and Kix have been around for a long time. We were able to meet him. We didn't get to talk to him and interview him at the last Rockin' Pod, which was not this last year, but was the year prior. And but I did meet him down there and got a picture with him, and he was a real cool dude. And you know, like I said, we're all fans of Kix and also, you know, all those bands in that era. And then just recently I saw Brian on YouTube and on his Facebook page, and he is a grilling fiend. He's not one of those typical vegetarian rock and roll stars. He is a Tyrannosaurus Rex. I mean, he's a T-Rex. He's all into meat. So, and the kind you grill and the kind you smoke. So anyway, but anyway, Brian, how you been doing? You been doing all right?
Yeah. I mean, this whole year I've been pretty much at home, but it's actually a good thing. I've really enjoyed it. You know, for all those years of just nonstop touring and traveling, and then just everything just sort of slowed down. And it was so nice to just be able to enjoy it being home, you know?
Exactly. So you're actually right outside of Nashville, right?
Yeah. I'm just like 10 miles north.
That's cool.
So, I have a question, Brian. Did Nashville put out a sign for all 80s rock guys, move here? And then like just half the house prices, or what did they do? Because it's amazing how many of you guys live there. It's crazy.
Well, yeah. Well, I knew a few people that lived here, but until I decided I was going to come here, I didn't realize. Then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you live here too. Oh, you live here. And I'd go out and I'd run into people and I didn't know you lived here, you know? So yeah, it's crazy how we've all sort of migrated here. I mean, the reason I did was because I had to get out of California. I couldn't afford it anymore out there, and I wanted to buy a house, and this is the best place to come for to buy a house.
Well, that's a good thing you did.
It's a cool place too. The music scene is really happening here, or was till this year.
Right,
it'll get back.
And it's a good thing you did when you did, because right now Nashville prices are getting. They're going to the California prices in the last year.
Not quite California, but
they have raised a ton. Because my wife and I, you know, we've always said, you know, we live in Indiana, which is we're about 2 hours from Nashville north, and southern Indiana. And we've always said, you know, we'd like to go down there. And we've kind of looked at, you know, different housing and stuff like that. And it has went up a lot. You know, downtown Nashville has just really boomed, especially down the Gulch area and that. You know, it's high, ultra high, you know, kind of prices and stuff. But anyway, you know, so you came, but you originally came out of Maryland. So you were an East Coaster. So when did you move to, so how long was you there? I know that's where Kix started, and then kind of go through this. I know you probably did this 100 times, but.
I grew up in Maryland. I was born in Illinois, but we moved there when I was like 2. So I stayed there till 93 when I left Kix. I left Kix in 93. And two of my brothers had moved out to California. And, you know, I'd go visit them out there. We did 2 records out there too. And I just fell in love with it out there. So when I decided I wanted to leave Kix, I was sick of the seasons, I think. I think that's one of the things that motivated me the most. I wanted that LA weather. So I moved out there in 93, and I stayed out there until like 2 years ago is when I moved here. So you know, and Kix reformed in 2003. So I was flying, you know, across the country for shows, or they'd come out there sometimes. But so I was always flying around to wherever I had to go. So when it came time to decide where I wanted to go, it was like, well, as long as I'm near an airport, I can live wherever I want, you know? And, you know, at first I thought about moving back to Maryland, but it was like, no. Well, I happened to go there in the wintertime, and it was like I remembered why I left. Yeah, and there were friends I had here, and people started telling me, hey, you should start looking around Nashville. It's pretty affordable. So I took a week and came here and just did nothing but drive around to different areas. And then I hooked up with a realtor, and we did this 2-day run of like just looking at houses nonstop. And I found this house like at the end of the second day. So it was like really fast. I came here for a week and left, and I had already found a house and started the process of buying it.
That's
Cool.
cool. So basically, I don't know how I want to get to. So we'll go first. What was the, so in Maryland in 77, when you guys first started out, what was the scene like there? I mean, you know, you're not in California, you're not, what was the East Coast scene like in 77?
Well, we formed in December 77, but we actually only had one rehearsal, and then there was a blizzard. So we didn't actually start up
On the
in
East Coast? Wow.
in Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland.
So we officially got started early, you know, the beginning of 78. But it was weird back then. You know, it was the end of the 70s, so music was sort of going through that transition phase. There was punk rock, and we were a rock band, and I remember we had to play covers because that's the way it was back then. Like to get gigs, you had to play covers, and a lot of the clubs were like 3 sets a night kind of thing, you know. So we built up a set list of cover songs, and it was hard. A lot of them were like classic rock, like Humble Pie and stuff like that, and Aerosmith. But there wasn't a whole lot happening at that time for rock. Maybe a Cheap Trick was one of the good ones. But it was kind of like this dry period, and so we had that. So we were basically a cover band, and we would sneak our own songs into the set. And then at some point, somebody introduced us to AC/DC, and nobody had heard of AC/DC around there. And when we heard it, it was like, wow, where were these guys? Like, how come we never heard of these guys? So we started doing AC/DC. And as soon as we did that, it was like we found our sound. Because we're kind of like a, not complete AC/DC like Rhino Bucket or something, but it's like a, you know, a mixture. We have the energy of AC/DC, but we have like the Aerosmith thing and maybe a little Stones in there. But that sort of gave us a direction. And yeah, and it just started taking off from there once we found that.
That's
Cool.
cool. Like I said, we and like I said, you so you then you did your first album, what, 81? And then
And that's the other thing. The music scene was pretty happening in Maryland. There was a lot of places to play, especially around Baltimore. And there was a band called Face Dancer that had a record deal. And that's what we ultimately wanted. We wanted to get a record deal. And they were the only band we knew that had one, so we used to do shows with them, and we ended up hooking up with their manager, and that's how we ended up with a record deal. So that happened, yeah, right at the end of 1980. That's when we, so like 81 is when we got signed and did the first record.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like I said, we talked to Jeff Pilson a lot, or we've actually had him on 4 times. He's getting to be a regular, but we're big Dokken fans also, and we've always talked to, with him about the fact of, you know, how Dokken was always there, always had the hits, but never got to that, you know, never got to that next level as far as, you know, what was going on. And I know I've read and I've seen a bunch of stuff where, you know, you guys, you had all these bands opening for you, then, and like this, and the thing is, you had the hits, you had the videos. What was the thing that you think that that didn't click, or what happened to that? You know, it's always, I find it interesting.
Yeah, we did too. I just think it's, you know, it's a combination of things. You know, a band can be really good, and but if the timing's off,
right,
you know, it can throw everything off. And I think that was what was wrong with us. It was just bad timing with everything that we did. Like the, you know, getting signed really early like that too. It was, there wasn't a lot of, well, you know, Atlantic didn't even have a heavy metal department. Like,
I mean, at 81, you were way before all those bands out in California were getting signed. You know what I'm saying? You were way before that.
Yeah, so Atlantic didn't even have a department for that kind of music until Skid Row came along. That's when they established like the heavy metal, hard rock thing. Even though AC/DC was on there, but everything was lumped together on that label, so it was almost like they didn't know what to do with us.
Right. But,
you know, it's a wonder they kept us around so long.
Did you That's find interesting. It? I would have thought they would have had an A. You know, like you were saying, you know, it's interesting they didn't have an AR guy that did. That was their focus, and I think it was maybe it was because the music at the, you know, in the early 80s was really still kind of trying to find its way, and then, you know, 81, 82, then it was like, oh, here we go. And by then it was like, okay, now you got to start focusing. Cause, and then you get every freaking person on the label. All sounds, you know, 90% all sound the same. And that became a problem too. So,
well, that's the pattern of those record companies.
Sure. Yeah,
they find the one hit and then they try to copy it after that. But yeah, that is true. Like when we were signed, it was like new wave and, you know, all that stuff was going on.
Right.
And so we didn't quite fit in with the scene. And, you know, when it came time to do the second record, they wanted us to be more commercial and write singles and this. And, you know, that's why Cool Kids kind of came out like this little pop record. And that didn't work for us either. So, you know, I don't think until we did Midnight Dynamite, we didn't really find our sound totally. You know, it was still being developed.
Right. And then, like I said, then you followed that up with Blow My Fuse, which was a huge hit for you guys. I mean, that was a platinum album. You know, that's the one that, and that's, you know, it was the first one that I picked up. You know, when I started collecting vinyl again, I finally got to, I was able to pick that up. But like I said, I remember myself back in that day when it was, for some reason, you guys weren't on my radar at that point. I don't know, because I was, you know, I was a big Kiss fan at that point, you know, back in you know, the early 80s and that part, and then kind of got into the Maiden and then all that stuff. But then my wife, when I met her and her friends, my wife's friend, it was all about Kicks. I mean, Amanda was the biggest Kicks fan ever. And I'm like going, yeah, I like those guys, but they were just, you know, it wasn't one of those things that it wasn't until later on when I started going back through the catalog and listening that it's like, oh yeah, I do like this. But it was, you know, when you're 18, 19 years old, you get, you know, oh, it's Maiden and it's Kiss, you know, that kind of rush and that kind of stuff, you know. But no, if you go back through the catalog, it's some great stuff, really good stuff.
Yeah, it's just it's hard to explain. I mean, I guess it's just pretty much the timing of the whole thing. But the cool thing was for us, you know, Donnie was the primary songwriter, and he kind of matured as we went, and it really helped. I mean, by the time we got to Blow My Fuse, his songwriting was just like top notch. So, and we got new management around that time, which helped too. Because before that, we were kind of, that was the other thing. We never had like proper management. I mean, we had managers, but, you know, similar to the record company, they didn't know what to do with us. They would just sort of say, okay, I'll be your manager. And we had to pay them commission. And then they didn't do much.
Collect a check, basically.
I don't think you're the only band in that era that got caught up in that.
No, that's. We've heard that story.
Yeah, more than once. But I think it goes back to your point. I think that music scene was changing at that time, and there were people that really didn't know what to do. They may have done it something different with another band, and they just thought it'd just be the same kind of process, and it really wasn't. It needed to change and mature, and it really hadn't done that yet. But you know, it's kind of funny because you have that we have this conversation today about that, but you know, I don't know of anybody that's in their 50s or late 40s or whatever that doesn't go back to that era of music, and that is that's the hub. You know, everything after that is, it's just that 80s stuff is just, it's amazing how, and I'm, you know, I guess I think about it, and I think if thinking about my mom and stuff like that, I'm thinking about the 60s, you know, the music of the 60s, that was her hub. You know, whenever she would listen to stuff, even at the age of 50, that was what she was listening to, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever. So it's amazing how it just all connects. And when you get that, whatever you grow up with just seems to be the place you go. That's where you're comfortable.
Yeah. I relate to that. I mean, my whole thing was the 60s and 70s. That's where I grew up, you know.
Right. So you guys are, I mean, and I know you're not current, well, because of COVID, nobody's doing anything. But you guys are, if COVID wasn't around, you guys would be touring, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything got shut down. Our calendar was full.
Wow.
It was going to be a great year. And then, then little by little, you know, the first 2 months, they pushed everything up in, you know, 2 months later. And then every time you'd get close to it, it would get pushed further and further and further. And then finally, they just changed the date from 2020 to 2021 on all the shows. So we have actually a couple coming up, which is cool. Good. So it looks like they may start trickling in. So
Where are those shows at? Do you know off the top of your head?
Well, they haven't been 100% confirmed, but I'm pretty sure they're going to happen. There's one in Hopewell, Virginia at the Beacon Theater that's coming up. That one for sure I think we're going to do. Then there's one the next night, the State Theater in, is it Fairfax or Alexandria? I forget where that's located. But that one I'm not sure about yet. We haven't heard, so.
Yeah, we're starting to see some shows here. Yeah, we're starting to see some shows here in Indiana get sold. So, I mean, they're selling tickets. So, mm-hmm. like the Shed that's in Indianapolis has now got, I think, 12 or 14 shows that are for sale that are for, you know, start. I think they start in June. I'm sure it'll be very limited seating in the, you know, both the lawn and the pavilion.
That's what I was going to ask. Are they going to be, if they,
yeah, it's limited seating for sure.
So they're going to be separating people, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's an outside.
That'll be fun in the lawn. You'll have just everybody have their own little,
little
roped off pod thing, I guess, but whatever.
It's like an amphitheater.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an outside amphitheater.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the outdoor shows will probably, that's what'll happen first.
Yeah, and it'll be good. I mean, I'm telling you, I'm going to go to a show. I don't really, at this point, don't care who it is.
Right now, I would go to just about anything right now, just to go to a show. No, I'm not Aaron.
No,
anything.
I won't go to a Dave Matthews show. I'm not doing that.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing an old rap, and I'm probably not going to do any
not
country.
Doing that. But I have a 23-year-old son that periodically will send me a Dave Matthews meme or something like that because he knows I freaking hate him. He's like, hey, can we get tickets to Dave Matthews? I said, we cannot. You are welcome to. We are not going.
So were you guys hitting all the major, the big festivals too, when they were going on? Is that something you were going to be doing this year or last year before the thing?
Yeah. There's several that we do pretty much every year. Like there's a bunch up in like Minnesota.
Right.
Where else?
Probably Rocklahoma, or you guys do that one?
We did Rocklahoma a few times, but I haven't heard anything recently about it. But I'm trying to think of what other festivals.
A lot of those are getting kind of delayed too. They're not really going to go.
Yeah, well, like M3 just got postponed because that was still on the calendar until earlier this month, and then.
That's a show I want to go to. That show. I mean, every time I see that, I see that lineup, I'm like, I want to go to that show. But that is, that's not a walk in the park to get there from here. That's a plane ride.
Kentucky though, that Louder Than Life's been doing really good. But
yeah,
that they've been getting some big names in there and some cool shows. But of course, you know, COVID. I don't think they haven't even heard them talk about this year. I think they just said basically we're not even going to try. They're just like going. let's just wait another year, put another digit behind the number, and we'll be done, you know.
So, Brian, you guys have played the M3 Festival a couple of times, right?
You actually played it every year.
So. I'd read that. That's why I was curious how you would answer that question. It's like, yes, like every time.
Definitely. That's one.
So that's in Maryland, is that right?
Yeah, well, it's Columbia, Maryland, which is okay. Right out of Baltimore. And okay. I think it's associated with the club Rams Head Live, where we also play. But yeah, that's a really cool gig every year.
It's like a mecca for 80s bands. Yeah. I mean, it's just like the place to go.
That's how Rocklahoma started.
Yeah.
I remember the first year I did Rocklahoma was actually with Rhino Bucket, and then Kix did it the year after. But yeah, it was like all 80s bands. But then they tried to get, you know, try to mix it up a little, and it kind of fell apart after that. So, but I think that I think the last time we did it, I'm trying to remember, we were like on a side stage the last time we did it. The first two times we were on the main stage, but yeah, when we went back, it was more like this weird mix of different kinds of bands. It wasn't like a focused 80s thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they didn't follow the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" rule, did they?
There's still a lot of people there, though. So
I saw something real quick on your Facebook page the other day about you mentioned who would be interested in a relic guitar like I play. Is that something that's in the planning stages, or just a wish list?
Yeah. In fact, I've been talking to this guy that he builds guitars for, he does Gene Simmons basses.
Right.
Ace Frehley, he does Lita Ford, and Brad Gillis, he does his guitars. So he does that. He does like replicas of
right. guitars.
So he got a hold of me and wanted to know if I was interested in maybe trying it. So I was like, yeah, sure. So we were talking about it, and to do a really nice one like that somebody can actually play, it's, you know, it's pretty pricey. So sure. He was going, well, I wonder if maybe we should have like the good one, and then have like a more like a discount version. So that's kind of why I threw that out there, to see if people would be interested in a couple different things, you know.
So the one you were looking at is what, a 71 Telecaster relic?
Yeah,
that's one. I don't have a Telecaster, so I would probably in the and these guys know that I'm a sucker for one that's like somebody's guitar. I've got a Grohl, Dave Grohl, and I've got this and that. I've got I'm one of those guys. So,
well, good. You can be a potential customer then.
There you go. But I saw you put that out there, and I was just curious if it was one of those you were just kind of fishing for, you know, if people were interested, or if you'd actually thought about doing it or doing it. Because I love stuff like that. I think relic guitars are fantastic, especially for somebody who wants something that looks like that. And then, you know, it's kind of I think it's just cool as hell.
So for not a guitar guy, what's a relic guitar? Is that just a
so it's not shiny?
Well, it's not. Well, basically, this one that we're doing, I got together with a guy, and he took all these photos of my guitar. And what he'll do is, you know, he'll buy a basic Tele, and then spray it the same color as mine, and then follow the wear patterns. And you know, so when he's done with it, it's gonna look just like mine.
So the fretboard is gonna have some wear look on it, where your arm's always hitting on the top part. And where your hand's always going to go, there's that thing. Same thing they did, you know, they did that with the Eddie Frankenstein. You know, they redid those. Those were super uber expensive when they did those.
Yeah, some of those can be really expensive.
I mean, they did like even the cigarette marks where the burns, where they had them just perfect from the original, and they were, you know.
Yeah, in fact, Gibson put out I remember doing a search on, they did an Alan Collins, what is that? The Explorer, you know, right. The guy. Skinner, and they had a limited edition that they put out, and it was like $10,000 for that thing. It was really pricey.
Yeah, some of those are really high. I know, like they're super duper uber high.
There you go, Dennis. Brian's is going to be like $995. So
I might get the I've been on your podcast discount, so there you go. Plus I'm
five,
a griller.
$5 off. I think that's actually an upcharge.
I'll smoke you a brisket. How's that?
He's like, I'll smoke my own.
I was watching your last video of where you were doing the comparison. I didn't finish it, but I was watching you as you were carving that brisket up, which I did that here recently. And so anyway, while we're talking about this, let's talk just a second about this. I know this is not music oriented, but got a couple questions for you.
Okay.
The egg situation. I want to know about I see your things that you're doing. You're using duck eggs and goose eggs and chicken eggs.
Yeah.
Where in the hell do you buy duck and goose eggs at? I mean, is there markets for that? Seriously. Yeah,
there's a farm down the road. Okay. But it's funny because I've been eating duck eggs like for years now. Really? Even when I was in California, I found some lady up the street in my neighborhood that had ducks. So I used to buy duck eggs from her. So it's like you can find them. And sometimes they'll sell them. They're a little more expensive at stores.
Right.
Like if you're buying them at a farm or something, they're cheaper than eggs at a store. But yeah, I think Whole Foods had them, but they were pricey.
So what is it like the yolks are just bigger? I always, from what I could see, it looks like the yolks are a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit different, but.
Yeah, the yolks are bigger and they're creamier. They're like thick. They're really nice though. They're about double, like the nutritional value is about double of what a regular egg would be.
Interesting. I got to find me somebody with some ducks.
Yeah,
gotta get me some of
those. I can just see that video. We got to call
here, ducky.
Yeah, we got to call Kelly and say, hey, if you see Dennis out in the yard chasing ducks around, can you videotape that for us? Because we need to put that on the show.
I need some duck eggs now. But no, like I said, it was one of those things. You always hear of, all these rock stars and all these people are these vegetarians and they're all about this stuff here. And I see your page and I'm like going, oh my God, everything you're cooking. I'm like going, I mean, you're into meat. I mean, it's, you don't do vegetables, right?
Well, it's funny because I wasn't always like that. For years, I didn't eat meat. I only ate fish. So I was a pescatarian. So it's basically a vegetarian that ate fish, but yeah, until how many years ago was it? Maybe 5 years ago or so, I started getting into fitness back when Kix first got back together because, we hadn't seen each other in 10 years. And then the first time we met, I see Steve and he was in such good shape. And I'm like, wow, I got to get in shape. So it put me on the path to health, getting healthy. Right. And, so I started getting into the nutrition after that. After I got the physical part down, I started looking into nutrition and I follow all kinds of people now. And I went the keto route first and then I stumbled onto the whole carnivore scene and I do it mostly for health. I realized that really a human's digestive system is built to eat meat because that's where we came from. And that's how our brains grew and all that stuff from eating like protein and fat. So anyway, that's how I got onto that. And now I eventually cut out all the vegetables. I don't do fruit, vegetables, grains. It's all animal-based food. And it completely straightened out all the like the gut issues that I had like my whole life that I didn't even realize I had till I stopped eating that stuff. And then it was all of a sudden I was like, oh man, I feel so much better. Like all this time, like the doctors would always tell me, oh, you got to eat more fiber. And then it would just make it worse. So I found out, just cut out all the fiber and I'm fine. Which is crazy. It's kind of backwards from what most people think,
Well, I looked at your, actually when I saw, been watching your stuff and all the food and I'm like going, I can eat that. I mean, everything you're putting out there, I can eat. But then I started reading about the carnivore diet and all that stuff and how the there are stages that you go through. And I know the final one's like where you're eating only grass fed type meats and stuff like that. But I know that there was no wine or beer. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do that.
I think the way this whole thing got started was as an elimination diet.
Right.
You know, for people that have like autoimmune issues and gut problems and stuff, it's a way to, you eliminate everything, you get down to the basics, and then from there you can add stuff in. So like,
gotcha.
You know, maybe you can tolerate wine or beer, you know, and be fine right. with it.
But yeah, no, like I said, I'm looking at you and you're eating shrimp and like I said, the steaks are just phenomenal. And I love eggs. I eat eggs all the time. I'm like, going, damn, I could do that. And I've met you. You're like, I'm a hefty, big, fat old guy. You know, and it's like, I know
you're 2X.
I'm a 2X. And I, you know, and I've met Brian. He's a skinny dude. I mean, he's in shape. And I mean, I'm like, on shit, that's what I want to be. I need to eat like that.
But it's like once you cut out the sugar and the carbs and all that junk, it pretty much falls into place.
That's the problem. It's the sugar and the carbs. The sugar and the carbs just, man, just take your, that's right. Carb up, baby.
I don't do breads. I don't like sweets. So I got a lot of that knocked out already. You know,
there's something wrong with you.
I like beer. I like
we've
wine.
Known that for a long time, though.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, so on your smoker or your grill, what's your favorite thing to make? If you were going to have us over, what would you make for somebody else? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, there's a few different things. I mean, I love just a plain old ribeye steak. It is my go-to usually, but like for a long smoke or something, a brisket is great. I really love short ribs. Like, oh man, I got a bunch down. I was just looking at those in my freezer tonight, and I was like, I got to eat.
I have not done short ribs. That's something I'd like to do. I've done a lot of just, you know, your pork ribs, but I've not done the short ribs.
Yeah, get to I buy from a local farm that sells grass fed, but I get the Wagyu.
Yeah.
So it's not completely grass fed, but they're there's nothing like them. Like just thinking about it, and I already ate tonight, and just thinking about it makes my mouth.
I did actually two big pork butts. They had them on sale this week, so I did two big pork butts this week and made barbecue out of it. And,
yeah, I love doing that too.
But I did do the brisket here a while back. I took the plunge and I bought the big uncut piece, and then I, of course, went on YouTube, learned how to cut all the fat, and I for the first time I did it, it had a real nice smoke ring on it, and it was delicious. I mean, so I'm ready to do it again.
It's hard to mess up brisket, but occasionally somebody will, and it's like, I wonder what he did. But I find,
go ahead.
A water pan in there, and you spritz it with the apple cider vinegar. Like I put a water pan up top, and then I put one underneath to catch the drippings. But I'll put a little bit of water in that too, so it's all, you know, I have a lot of moisture in there.
Yeah, I did it on Pit Boss, and I didn't install either. You know, everybody talks about them stalling out. Hell, mine never did. Mine just kept going. I'm like, going, well, shit, this is easy. Now, probably the next time it'll stall and I'll be sitting there for 15 hours, you know.
But, well, you can always wrap it.
Wrap it and I'm go from there. Bill, I'm sorry.
What do you use to grill, Brian? Are you using a Pit Boss or what kind of?
I have a Traeger.
Oh, okay. I've seen those. Yeah.
Yeah, pellet smoker. But I started out on a tiny little Smoky Mountain. One of those little Weber Smoky Mountains. Mm-hmm. It's like a little tube. Mm-hmm. It was too small. I couldn't fit a brisket on there. So it was a bummer when I think that's why I had to get the bigger one, because I wanted to smoke a brisket.
A friend of mine has one of the egg. I mean, actually, I know a couple people that have the eggs.
Right.
They have the green eggs, and they do really well.
Yeah. I know a guy that has one of those. Yeah. Yeah, there's several of the other ones that are just fine. They work great. In fact, that the Smoky Mountain, the Weber that I started with, it was a challenge because, you know, it was the smallest one, and but it taught me everything I needed to know about smoking, because you know, that was like learning the hard way. And then now I want a Traeger. It's just like, yeah, just push the button and walk away.
Set it and forget it. I mean, that's all you do. It's the same way with that Pit Boss. I mean, it holds temp really well. And, you know, and I got a digital thermometer. The new ones have actually had the Bluetooth. Mine's an older, I got an older model. So I've got, but I bought some Bluetooth, you know, thermometers, especially for the brisket. You know, you want to kind of monitor that.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in the house. I'm like going, well, it's still going. I'm good. You know? But all right. Well, getting off the food thing. So during the pandemic, do you write new music? Do you work on anything new or?
Well, it's funny because when the shutdown first started and I it was just like endless time. I was like, had all these ideas, like what I could do with my time. And I kind of, you know, I have this music room down in my basement. And it's funny, I put together a workout room also downstairs in half of my garage is my little workout room. But that ended up being what I concentrated on all my time off was the workout thing. But I have done some music. In fact, you know, people send me stuff to play on, and I've done a few of those, you know, where we record and then you video it and then somebody puts it together and throws it up there.
Right.
You know, I've done a few of those. In fact, I have two that I'm still working on. I haven't finished. And I was playing on a few songs on this record, Eddie Spaghetti from Super Suckers. Him and this guy Frank Meyer are putting out a record together, so they asked me to play on it, and they're covering Heartache. It's going to be on the record, so I played on that. So yeah, there's stuff here and there. No kick stuff though. I mean, we talked about it, but because I live down here and the travel during this time was a little rough. So
right.
Yeah, so I wasn't able to do that. But I did play on it, and then I played on another band up in Maryland, a Maryland band. They had me play some guitar tracks, and that's a project that Brad Divins is associated with. So I went up to Brad's house. He has a really nice studio, and recorded up there. So I've been doing some stuff.
Well, that's cool. And like I say, in these times, you know, sometimes keeping your mental and physical health up was more important than anything, because everybody's been locked down and instead of sitting around watching Netflix for 20 hours a day.
Oh, you're not supposed to do that?
Yeah, I know. I didn't get the memo either. That's what the same thing I did this summer. Ballooned up and didn't really do much. So actually I was on a smoking frenzy. I did 42 slabs of ribs in a week and a half.
Holy crap, you did? Is that when you were selling them, like in the front yard?
I basically just
extra money.
Drive? Well, no, it was just drive up and basically just cover my cost is what it was. I was selling them for a lot cheaper than what they, you know, if you buy a slab of ribs someplace else, it's expensive. And I just basically covered my cost, and this is something for me to do. Plus the fact that I had people that were like, "You always showing shit on Facebook, and you never cook me anything." So I'm like going, "Okay, who wants fucking ribs?" And I'm like going, "Here it is. $15 a slab, whatever it was." And then it's like, come get it. I'll drive up, I'll walk to your car, hand it to you in foil with the mask on, and you can have it. So I went through a shitload of ribs. I was a cooking mofo. I got tired of them for a while. But yeah, everybody was happy.
I kind of learned how to do all that too during the pandemic.
Pretty much. I mean, he's got to, and you know what? Because I was off for 7 weeks for work, so I was like going, I have nothing else to do. I'm getting paid to sit home, and I'm like going, you know what? I got to do something, or I'm going to lose my mind. So
that's a short drive too, man.
Yeah, it is a short drive.
Like that long, right to the end.
All right, so
I've got a question.
Go ahead.
If you were to form your ultimate favorite band, obviously not including the members of Kix, who would be in your dream band?
Wow, that's a good question. Oh, wow. Like current people?
Anybody.
Whomever.
It doesn't matter if they're current, they're past, or whatever. This is your dream band.
Dead or alive?
Dead or alive.
Ooh, man, that opens up all kinds of things. Wow. I'd say, I'm trying to think. I would love to play with, for a drummer, Charlie Watts. But I'm sure there's another drummer that has his feel around, but I've always loved his feel. And then for like a bass player, man, there's so many good ones. I don't even know some of their names, but I know records that have like the bass just stands out to me. Like the old Elvin Bishop records from the 70s. Bass player was just, I love that feel. And then I'd love like Steve Marriott for a singer. God. And I'd say, let me think of a keyboard player. Chuck Lavelle for a piano. I think, good. Yeah.
So I'm trying to figure out here. So let's see.
Dennis is trying to Google on the fly.
I'm trying to think of one of his better albums here. Let's see,
Who, Elvin Bishop?
Yeah, Let It Flow. Let It Flow. I was just thinking, Let It Flow. So on that would have been Personnel, would have been your bass player, would have been Michael Fly Brooks.
Wow.
Don't know who that is, but you know.
He was great, man.
Yeah, there you go. That's who it was. But anyway.
We'll have to tag him in this.
Yeah, and actually, he did. All the names are highlighted except for his, and so I don't even know. He probably didn't even have a page. He probably just was a guy on the fly. Who knows? Was. But anyway,
amazing, so,
interesting. So anyway, so you're hopefully going to have some gigs coming up here soon, and then hopefully have your guitar, one of the relic guitars, coming out. I'd like to be able to see that.
Yeah, and they're going to be. They're going to be special order. So like,
okay.
This guy that's helping me with the thing, he's putting together a website. So, you know, when somebody wants to buy one, he talks to them and he can like modify it any way they want. Like it's the basic version is going to be just like mine with the same pickups and everything. Wow. But if somebody wants something special, they can also have that done. And then the way that he does this is they'll pick a kick show, and they'll come and pick up the guitar at the show, and I'll get it out and I'll play it for them after sound check so they can hear what it sounds like, and then you know they get to sit there and watch the sound check, and then they get to watch the show, and then afterwards there's like a thing where I'll take photos and stuff with them with the guitar. So it's going to be a whole like little package.
So you went through the Gene Simmons school of how
to sell a guitar. Yeah. He takes it a little bit farther than that.
Well, I know, but I mean, but at least you're not just selling somebody something online and they get a box from the UPS truck and it drops it off at your house. At least you're getting an experience out of it. So you're getting the Brian Forsythe experience.
Well, the cheaper models maybe will get.
Oh, those are the ones you get from Amazon. They just come straight to your house.
I'll find them, but yeah.
Dennis, yours is coming in a U-Haul, buddy.
Yeah, I'll be UPS or FedEx will be dropping mine off probably, but no, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
We're still ironing out the details, so
right. We'll see. So, Alan, you want or where can people find you as far as information on that and everything else? You and Kicks and your grilling and where can we see all this?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have a personal website that I don't, it's just dormant. It's just sort of sitting there. I don't really do much with it. So, you know, most people can find me on Facebook. I have my personal page is just Brian Forsythe. And then I have my Brian Damage Forsythe page, which is like the musician page. So both of those, I post on both of those. And then Kix has a Facebook page and a website. There's the Kix website is kixband.com, and that's got all our tour dates and stuff on it. But when this, whenever this guitar becomes available, I'll definitely post it on Facebook, like because we'll have a separate website for that. So,
Well, that you can send it to us, and we'll post it on our page also, and help you out and everything.
Yeah, I've seen the prototype for the website, but the link's not live yet. So
nice. So you're pretty close then. It's close to reality.
Yeah. We're working on it.
Awesome.
That's awesome. All righty. Well, Brian, thank you so much. And we appreciate you coming in here. And you're going to be at the Rockin' Pod this year?
Coming up? I was invited, but I had a prior engagement that I'm doing that exact same weekend. It's weird. It's like it just happened to fall on that same weekend. I was like, oh, man, I'm already booked. So I'm doing like this keto retreat thing, keto rocks retreat. So,
okay. Well, like I said, we was hoping to see you, but maybe we'll run into you. We come to Nashville quite a bit. Maybe we'll run into you at some other point, and hopefully if you're out and about
we'll warn you so you can hide from Dennis.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I get my guitar, I can come down and bug in. We can grill. But no, main thing is, like I say, hopefully we'll get to see you out on tour somewhere. Hopefully we'll get to catch kicks somewhere in the United States and close to us. So,
yeah I'm not going out of the state. So, yeah,
you will.
All right, hang tight for a minute, Brian. I'll take us out of here
real quick.
You know what to do, folks. Visit us on agesofrock.com. Check out our past episodes and social media links. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.